to 6 months since the first cluster of coronavirus patients was reported. Since then, over 250,000 people have died, and as a result, people are wanting to make sure it won't happen again. Scientists are still trying to confirm where COVID-19 came from, but some suspect it emerged from a food market in Wuhan, China, where it's believed wild animals were sold. The suspicion has led to a number of people calling for a ban on so-called wet markets.
I think they should shut down those things right away. I mean, it boggles my mind how, when we have so many diseases that emanate out of that unusual human-animal interface, that we don't just shut it down. I don't know what else has to happen to get us to appreciate that.
That's Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases in the US, and he's also a lead member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. He was being asked about wet markets on the Fox and Friends morning news show. And he's not alone in wanting them shut. 60 lawmakers in the US wrote to the World Health Organization supporting the ban, and the Beatles singer Paul McCartney also supported a ban, calling them medieval. But the calls have been met with dismay by some.
It's ridiculous, actually, for most Chinese to hear the suggestion that we should ban all wet markets. It's like a Western government asking cities to ban supermarkets in Western cities.
I'm Greg Jackson, and this is The Food Chain from the BBC World Service. This week, we're asking if those calls for a wet market ban are justified, possible, or even desirable. And what if China relented to the growing international pressure and shut them down for good?
My name is Hong Ying Li. I grew up in China, but now I'm working for a nonprofit organization called EcoHealth Alliance in New York City. So our work is on emerging infectious diseases.
Hong Ying, what do we know about this virus and where it originated?
The general answer is we don't know much about this virus. But at this moment, all the scientific evidence shows this virus is originated from nature. And the closest virus we know now is a bat coronavirus. That is 96% similar to the virus caused COVID-19. However, for viruses, this 4% difference is huge. From the genetic evolution, it would take decades for this bad coronavirus to evolve to be able to infect human population. So we don't know how this happened. We don't know where and when this happened.
But scientists have some ideas. The predominant theory is that the virus jumped from bats into another animal and then from that animal into humans. The jump could have happened anywhere, in a farm or in a market. With COVID-19, there's some evidence to suggest that the infection spread from a market in Wuhan. 27 of the first 41 patients infected had some sort of contact with this market. And it's believed to have sold a number of alive or slaughtered wild animals, reportedly including snakes, deer, porcupines, and these scaly anteaters called pangolins. So some are hypothesizing that it's there, in this market, that the virus made the jump and began spreading across the world.
Mm-hmm. That's possible, yeah. That's one of my hypotheses.
So what is it about a market setting that means a virus can jump easily between, say, a bat, and some people have hypothesized that it might be a pangolin, for example? So what is it about that environment that viruses can thrive in?
Yes, the unique environment of the market is it's an environment that humans bring many different species together in one place. That's where it creates a higher opportunity to virus to spill over either from one species to another species or from animals to humans.
How do they jump physically?
For SARS in 2003, the hypothesis was someone brought the bats and the civets together in the market. Maybe they were stuck the cages together, so the bat urinate and the civets have had contact with the urine. So that's how the virus jumps.
It's these hypotheses that have led some to call for a global ban on wet markets.
We don't have that term in Chinese, unfortunately. So if we define a wet market as where people get fresh produce, then that's what a food market is in China. We don't use the term wet market.
This is Chang Tian Le.
I work for Beijing Farmers Market. I'm also the editor of online media called Food Think, and I'm in Beijing, China. So if we're going to discuss food market, then that's everything you can buy for your dinner table. Vegetables, meat, fish, eggs. Some are outdoors, but more often we have indoor markets of this kind. And the difference between such a food market and the supermarket is there are different stores owned by different owners.
And so would you get live animals commonly at a market, or is it mainly sort of butchered meat?
20 years ago, it's quite often to get live animals, especially chicken. We want to have our chickens freshly slaughtered. But since the bird flu, I think most big cities banned live animal trading in such markets.
And Chang says, contrary to some reports, live wild animals are just as rare. We wanted to better understand what Chang was describing, so, unable to travel to China ourselves, we asked a local reporter in Shanghai to film an indoor market for us. It's called Wujon Market, and this is what I saw when I sat down to watch. Fresh leafy green vegetables are piled high. There's mushrooms, carrots, a squash chopped in half to show off its bright orange flesh. Next to it are Chinese cabbages like pak choi and choi sum. Nearby, blue tanks are stacked against the wall with an array of fish. Prices are affixed to the glass with white sticky labels. A man stops to buy some shrimp. There's a woman making dumplings, squashing a green paste into round patties. Behind her, a little girl sits in a buggy, dressed in a bright pink jumper, her fringe tied back off her forehead. It's all very ordered, clean, brightly lit, and very quiet. Everyone, the customers as well as the vendors, is wearing masks. There's no sign of caged wild meat ready for slaughter anywhere. That said, everyone we spoke to for this programme told us that markets in big cities are cleaner and more modern than those outside the city. But they also told us that to depict all of China's food markets as dirty and chaotic is unfair.
When I actually went to market to sell fresh produce with my parents, who were vegetable farmers at that time, the market we went to in our city is an open-air market. So this market is much less kind of regulated, and also it has much worse sanitary conditions compared to the markets we have nowadays in Chinese cities.
Meet Zheng Zhongxi. He grew up in China, but now researches food security, food safety, and ecological agriculture at the University of Waterloo in Canada.
In the past few decades, the Chinese government has invested a lot of money to upgrade the facilities of these wet markets. And a lot of these markets were actually relocated to indoor buildings, and now they are indoor markets. For example, in Nanjing, the government has invested more than $35 million of US dollars in upgrading the facilities of its more than 350 wet markets in the city since 2008.
The market I saw was one of the indoor ones. But something that's been puzzling me is, why are they called wet markets? It's not a term I'd heard of before now, and Chang says it's not recognized in much of China. So where did it come from?
This wet market term is originated from a Hong Kong English. One of the reasons is that the floors of these markets are sometimes wet because of the spraying of vegetables and the slaughtering and cleaning of chicken and fish. It is also because they are mainly selling fresh produce as opposed to dried products.
Unlike Chan Tian Le, Zhen Zhong's keen to point out that wet markets selling live wild animals, reportedly like the one in Wuhan, are the exception, not the rule.
These are not wildlife markets, so we should be clear of the difference here. The majority of these wet markets, or I think we prefer to call them public markets now because of the conflation, they are the most important source of vegetables and fruits and meat, actually, for Chinese urban residents. Wet markets is pretty much like a farmer's market in the Western context. It is easier for people to understand. The only difference is that most of the vendors in this wet markets are resellers. They are sourcing food from larger markets, especially wholesale markets, and they are not farmers who produce those food. And also another difference is that these wet markets are operating 7 days a week and year round.
Markets aren't the only place you can stock up on fresh produce, though. Supermarkets have been around since the 1990s, and online grocery shopping is becoming more popular too. But based on Zhen Zhongxi's research a couple of years ago in the Chinese city of Nanjing, food markets are still king, especially when it comes to fresh food.
There are multiple reasons that these markets are popular. First is that the produce there is much fresher compared to supermarkets. And also the price of the food in wet markets is typically cheaper, according to our research in Nanjing. And also these wet markets are widely distributed in cities close to residential neighborhoods, and they are very easy to access.
It sounds like they're quite an important part of everyday life in China.
Yes, more than 70% of fresh produce consumed by Chinese urban residents actually came from these wet markets. And according to our research in Nanjing, 93% of households actually shopped at wet markets in the past year. And 75% of them went to these markets at least five times a week. It's mainly because a lot of these markets are located within walking distance in Chinese cities. It's very accessible, while supermarkets are located in much more, you know, remote areas from most of these urban residential complexes. So this is a very important kind of part of urban life from the majority of households in cities.
Gosh, so if these wet or public markets were banned, as some people are calling for, it feels like supermarkets would have to plug a pretty big gap in the food supply chain and where people get their food from.
Exactly. That's why I have been emphasizing the importance of wet markets in the urban food supply chain. It's ridiculous, actually, for most Chinese to hear the suggestion that we should ban all wet markets. It's like a Western government asking cities to ban supermarkets in Western cities. And I believe banning wet markets will create a huge problem for urban food security. It will significantly reduce the access to fresh produce and healthy food and cause a lot of public health problems.
And the other problem is the potential loss of thousands of jobs, a situation that Chang Tian Le is all too familiar with.
Well, I'm afraid Beijing actually has shut down many of such markets in the past 3 to 10 years. Different policy incentives behind that, I'm afraid.
Can you tell me what those incentives were?
The Beijing is under great pressure to reduce its population. And somehow the government believes that shutting down some of the markets, not only food markets, but also other wholesale and small retail markets too, will get rid of the traders in these markets so that they would leave Beijing, reducing the population of the city.
Chang says the plan worked.
It's a sad story for many traders, because when that got shut down, they lost their livelihood. There was a market near where I stay, and I think it's 3 years ago, we learned that the government will shut down that market. So I went to the market and I talked to one of the vendors. He sells fruits there. He's a fruit vendor. He said he's been to Beijing for 30 years and always trade vegetables and fruits in these kind of markets. And he's been at this market, which is a very popular one in the area, for 10, 20 years. But now he has to leave. So I asked him, what are you going to do after this? He said, because it's not the only market that got shut down in Beijing. There are not many new markets or empty stores for him to rent. So he's thinking about going back to his own hometown, but he doesn't know what he's going to do there. Because although he was a farmer, but he hasn't farmed for 30 years. He didn't know anything about farming anymore. And he didn't know the town that he's going to move back to. So he was very sad and angry.
And Chang says the scheme was unpopular with customers as well. She paints a similar picture to Zheng Zhongxi, with residents having to travel further for less nutritious and more expensive supermarket goods. But that wasn't the only way that shopping changed when the city's markets started disappearing.
When you go to such a market, people are always more relaxed there. In supermarkets, all you can talk to is the cashier, and they're always very busy. You don't want to waste their time. But in wet markets, it's quite different. People like to talk to you. I remember last year, my colleague and I were on a business trip in Hangzhou, East China. And it was spring, so they sell all these lovely bamboo shoots and local vegetables we can't get in Beijing. So before we left to the city, before we went to the airport, we went to this wet market to buy maybe two full boxes of bamboos and local vegetables, grains, and some of the rice pudding they have, the sweet thing. And all these vendors find us very funny, two women from Beijing doing all this shopping in large quantity, taking back to Beijing to share with their friends. So they all come to us and give us advice on how to keep these vegetables, how to cook them, and give us their cards, say if you want more, we can send it to Beijing for you. So it's a very different experience. You make immediate friends at such a market.
It's the hub of the community.
Yeah, it's a life hub, it's a community hub.
So how do you feel then when you hear other people referring to wet markets, in China as something as medieval, I think it's been called, and also calling for a ban on them?
I hope it's out of misunderstanding, if nothing else. I think they first need to understand that wet market, it's just like your local food market. I think in America, they call it public markets. Our market is just like that, but with different scale, maybe selling slightly different kinds of vegetables and meat. So to be honest, I don't quite understand how our markets are different from markets elsewhere. And how would those people feel if someone from a different country is saying you should shut down your own local market?
Do you feel like it's prejudiced in some way?
I think it's more ignorance. It's the ignorance of people who don't understand the other kind of lifestyle and don't respect that, don't believe that people will make the right decision and choices for themselves.
Perhaps there's something else too. I've seen articles and heard reports on the radio that depict cats and dogs being slaughtered at food markets. And from everything I've learned in making this programme, that is not representative of what markets are like in China. So why are wet markets reported in this way? Some academics argue that a lot of reporting is tinged with anti-Chinese sentiments, overlaid with Western ideals of what people should and shouldn't eat. Some wild animals, like civet cats or bamboo rats, according to this doctrine, are a no-go. But don't many people around the world eat wild game, like venison, pheasant, kangaroo, and bushmeat?
I also feel that's a popular myth among foreigners to Chinese. For example, we do eat a few things, like we eat chicken feet, and we eat more organs of animals that maybe others don't eat. But in Scotland, people there eat the lamb organs.
Yeah, we eat haggis.
Yeah, in Italy, they eat all sorts of things that we eat, but we just cook it, prepare it in different ways.
From everything we've heard on the food chain from the BBC World Service, these markets are an essential part of Chinese culture and heritage, and the slaughter of animals for food, especially wild ones, is rare. But as we've seen, it does occasionally happen, and in response to the outbreak, the Chinese government has banned the selling and eating of wild meat. It's expected that it'll become law later this year. Laws, however, are only any good if they're enforced, and Hong Ying Li says that even if the ban is, it doesn't mean the end of China's wild animal trade.
The international community has been talking about this wildlife trade ban in China. But if we look closely to the document from the government, we can see the ban is really focused on the wild animal for food. So there are a large number of other wild animals are farmed for fur or medicine are not included in this ban. So the risk is still there.
Zoonotic diseases are not limited to wildlife, though. They can make the leap from domestic animals, as seen with swine flu and bird flu. So why is it now that all these infectious diseases are emerging?
So let's face the fact that viruses regularly emerge from animal to humans. So at a global level, the emergence of zoonotic disease is driven by human activities expanding to the natural habitat of animals, such as land use change, urbanization, extractive industry. So a very simple logic is if we human beings occupy the habitat of a wild animal, then they have to live closely with us. So we see these different cases happened in the past. In Malaysia, if we go there, we can see a massive deforestation for palm oil plantation that is associated with malaria. And in Bangladesh, we experience Nipah outbreak every year because the bats live around the community because they have to. They don't have other habitats that there's no human beings. So it's all of our activities of human beings. We actually made the pandemic.
Seventy percent of emerging infectious diseases in humans come from animals originally. That's why many organisations, including Hong Ying's, go out to search for the next possible threat.
In the past 10 years, we have been out in the field to do sampling from wild animal bats, rodents, and in other countries like non-human primates to find out what are the novel viruses they carry. Even they don't infect people at this moment, but once we know, we kind of know more information about this virus. And moving forward, I mean, in the future, if we know the virus, it's possible for us to make vaccine to prevent this disease spread in a such large scale like the COVID-19.
And so when you're out and about testing people and you're testing animals to see how common these viruses are, is it something you see all the time with every test, or is it quite rare that you see the emergence of these zoonotic diseases?
We went to the field, we look at the virus carried by the animals, and we also look at how people interact with those animals. So first of all, it's very common for people living in the rural community to interact with wild animals in many ways, like their bats roosting inside their house, and there's bats roosting in a cave just nearby the house. All the wild animal may contact with livestock, which may contact with humans living in the house. We did find some people who already exposed to some different types of coronaviruses with antibodies. So it's not happen all the time, but the virus are there and the interaction are very frequent. So the risk is high, especially like this COVID-19, if it can transmit it between human to human, that's a huge risk. But in our field research, we haven't found any virus like this.
That's reassuring, but there could be over a million more viruses lying undiscovered in wildlife. And as we overlap more and more with the natural world, as we cut down the rainforest or destroy animals' homes and force them to live among us, the risk of a viral spillover into humans becomes higher and higher. And one of the big underlying driving forces behind all of this? Food, says Zheng Zhongxi.
This outbreak is really a reminder for us to understand the connection between pathogens and industrialized food production. As existing studies point out, more than 60% of novel human pathogens were actually spilled over from wild animals to local human communities. This is reflected in how we actually produce food. Because we are now producing food in a way that exploiting nature through cutting down forests and cultivating more land in the very frontier of human habitats. So in this way, we are actually releasing viruses from the complex forest and other natural ecosystems that used to constrain all those viruses. And our global network of migration trade enabled the local spillover of viruses to spread at a global scale and become a pandemic. So the lesson for us is that we need to really rethink our relationship with nature through the lens of food.
We'll be returning to our relationship with nature through the lens of food in a couple of weeks, when we'll be finding out what role our food production has played in causing new and deadly viruses to emerge. So make sure you join us for that. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us on email, thefoodchain@bbc.co.uk, or on Twitter or Instagram. I'm at Greya Jackson. I may not be able to reply to every single one, but I read them all and really appreciate the time that you took to write to us. From me and the rest of the team, that's Simon Tulich, Siobhan O'Connell and Sarah Stollers, thanks for listening and do join us again next week.